It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Geek Therapy Radio.
Welcome to Geek Therapy Radio. I'm your mental curator, Johnny Hemberger. If you are listening to the show in its new time slot at 9 a.m. Sundays here on KPRC, at least for the time being, welcome into the Geek Therapy Radio podcast. When does Randy Lemon get done on KTRH? Randy is a friend of mine. I have known him for quite a while, and I think it's kind of a good bounce. Like, maybe he should, over on KTRH, tossed to the sister station, KPRC 950. Say, hey, if you want to get more of your hobby on, because a lot of gardening hobbyists, if you want to go listen to Geek Therapy Radio, you know, where we're all geeks about something, aka we all have our hobbies and passions, I think it's a good toss. Maybe I should talk to Randy about that. Is there some sort of rule against saying, hey, stop listening to this station and turn it to the other station? It's all iHeart. It's all the same station. But anyways, if you're a first-time listener, this is Geek Therapy Radio, and the motto of Geek Therapy Radio, anytime I get a new time slot, I like to re-up this motto. We are all geeks about something, no matter whether you're a geek about video games or you're a geek about vintage cars. I talk about vintage cars and cars all the time here on Geek Therapy Radio. Maybe you like old computers, new computers. Maybe you're all about the new Apple M1 SoC powered MacBook Air and MacBook Pro and Mac Mini. Maybe you're a diehard PC guy. Maybe you think x86 forever, baby. Long live x86. Live long and prosper, Intel, despite AMD smashing it out of the park. Maybe you're into painting. Maybe you're into gardening, like I said, from Garden Line, coming from Garden Line with Randy Lemon. Whatever you're into, knitting, baking, we're all geeks about something. We all have passions and hobbies, and I think that is extra critical, especially in these times. And I don't just mean because we live in this politically charged climate that we need a release valve, we need a little escape from the politics, or that it's a pandemic and we're all locked at home. It's all of those things. We more than ever now need to embrace and rekindle or renew or rediscover or discover a new hobby, but get back in touch with what makes you happy and what actually fulfills you. There's a difference between what makes you feel good and what makes you happy. A huge, catastrophic difference between just doing what feels good and what actually makes you happy. Heroin makes you feel good, but painting makes you happy. There's a difference between feeling good and joy, doing drugs and actually doing things that fulfill your soul, things that you make with your hands, things that you tinker on with your hands, an expression of yourself, an outward expression of yourself. It allows you to go inward, allows you to go outward. That's why I'm so passionate about listeners embracing their inner geek. And geeks are sexy. Geek is no longer a term that you toss at somebody in 1982 in high school. If you're a geek, that means you are actually fascinated by something. You're actually passionate about something. And people are usually drawn to people who are passionate about something. It means they have a reason for living. It's an infectious thing. So if you are a geek about something, which you are, we are all geeks about something, share your geek things with others. As long as it's something safe. You know, if your geek thing, if your geek thing is jumping motorcycles over school buses, maybe, you know, maybe when you're talking to a kid, hey, you should get into daredeviling. Maybe that's a kind of a more delicate conversation to have. Maybe you don't want to go tell a 12-year-old, yeah, get on that moped of yours, that 49cc moped of yours, get her up to 40 miles an hour and see how many Toyota Corollas you can jump over. See, so if you're a geek thing about daredeviling, maybe there's a way to have that conversation with somebody who is interested that maybe starts out with, hey, maybe just jump onto a pile of couch cushions. maybe don't recommend the full bore. Take a motorcycle over a school bus right off the first bat. But if you're a geek about something and it doesn't cause harm to others, share that geek thing with others. Now it is more important than other. Geek Therapy Radio is a, I call it an oasis from the politics. I don't really get into politics too much here on Geek Therapy Radio. That's not what it's about. Once in a blue moon, the politics I'll bring up will have something to do with, for instance, if I feel like the Green New Deal, quote unquote, will infringe upon owners of classic cars. Like if there's some sort of future which the government gets involved and says, you cannot put gasoline in your 1967 Mustang anymore. It's against the law. That's where I would bring it up on Geek Therapy Radio. I brought up a few times the FCC or the FAA getting involved in remote control aircraft, RC aircraft, any aircraft over a certain, it was like a quarter pound. And if you built an airplane, an RC airplane with your grandfather in 1960, 1970s, whenever, the FAA trying to impose regulations that, hey, you need to put GPS trackers on this now. You need to retrofit a GPS tracker that is locked into the cellular network for any aircraft over a quarter pound. That's overreach, and that's when I will bring it up on Geek Therapy Radio. But for the most part, you will not ever hear me talk about Joe Biden on here. You'll never hear me talk about Donald Trump on here. That's not what Geek Therapy Radio is about. So I think a good segue, after I've reintroduced for 6 minutes what Geek Therapy Radio is, and if you are a longtime listener of Geek Therapy Radio, thank you for bearing with me. I only do this when I'm on new time slots. The Geek Therapy Radio podcast, you can grab it in your favorite podcast app. Of course, we here at iHeartRadio prefer the iHeartRadio app, but any app, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, I like Pocket Casts on my Android phone, along with iHeartMedia. You just type in Geek Therapy Radio podcast and look for the red, white, and black color scheme, and that's me. I usually upload 2 podcasts per week at bare minimum. So it's the broadcast that gets uploaded as a podcast. And then somewhere around the middle of the week, Wednesday or Thursday or so, I upload a podcast only. And it's way more freeform. There's no commercials in there unless it's over 30 minutes and they make me put a commercial in the middle. But it's just a lot more, I can get more in depth with certain subjects knowing that there's not a commercial break coming up every 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 11 minutes, and 10 minutes as it's structured here on the radio. So Geek Therapy Radio podcast in your favorite podcast app. Look for the red, white, and black color scheme, and that's me. You can also contact me anytime you want through my website, geektherapyradio.com. The very first thing you see is a contact form. It just says, what's your geek thing? You know, questions, comments, and what's your geek thing? Just let me know what you're into. I had somebody reach out the other day that tell me they're into a retro, you know, well, not vaporwave. Was it vaporwave or synthwave? 80s synthesizer music? That's what I love to hear about. That's what I love to hear about is what you're a geek about. So geektherapyradio.com is the best way to contact me. Thank you for letting me reintroduce Geek Therapy Radio. We'll be right back in a moment to really geek out. Welcome back to Geek Therapy Radio. Got your mental curator, Johnny Hemberger. Go to geektherapyradio.com to contact me and for more information. Maybe you're a small business owner and you have a hobby shop or you have any sort of brick and mortar store. It's important to support local business now more than ever, but maybe you want some visibility for your business. It's more reasonable than you might think. But if you want to talk about that, geektherapyradio.com and contact me through there. Also, geektherapy@iheartmedia.com. That's my direct email. So just if you're interested, just got to put it out there, play salesman for a moment. I'm going to take off my salesman cap and let's start geeking out. Can anybody relate to this? Can anybody relate to, maybe it's kind of a niche situation. I'll just give you my for example, something that I've gone through recently. As my regular listeners know, I purchased very recently, maybe a week or two before my son was born, my son Riker was born, I purchased a used 2017 Chevy Bolt. The Bolt has been recalled due to, there was like 5 fires out of 5 battery fires out of like 70,000 vehicles. So GM sent me a letter in the mail saying it's recalled. They're going to do some sort of software update for now until they figure out a remedy to make good for all 70,000 bolts, 80,000 bolts that are out there. But anyways, that regardless, I have mine set to hilltop mode. I charge it to 90%. That's still good for like 200 miles a day. I'm fine with that. I'm still fine with the Chevy Bolt overall. That's Bolt with a B. It's the full EV. But that's not what I'm getting at here. When I went to buy the Bolt, I drove up there, obviously, in my daily driver, which was a 2010 Audi S5. Now, 2010 Audi S5, that's before they went with a 6-cylinder supercharged model. So the 2010 is the naturally aspirated V8 with a 6-speed manual transmission and 3 pedals, just as God intended for such a German Grand Touring coupe. I freaking love it. Her name is Rowdy. So I drove her up there, and here's the situation. You see what you can possibly get for it on the trade-in. You know you are going to get absolutely bent over a barrel on the trade-in offer. And the trade-in offers I had for Rowdy were between $5,000 and $7,000. The Chevy dealership I went to offered $5,000. I did not hold that against them. I knew that's what it would be, or I had a good inkling what it would be. But then I was kind of thinking, well, the only reason why I'll ask to see what the offer is on the car is because I know used cars are a hot commodity right now, and maybe they're offering more, you know, to the dollar for used cars. But that didn't turn out to be the case. So I didn't, moral of the story, long story short, I didn't sell the Audi to the Chevy dealership. I kept it. I said, well, if that's, I know I can sell it for way more on the private market if I put in my own kind of time and effort. And if I so choose, I want to sell it, I can get a lot more for it. So I kept Rowdy. And here's the situation that maybe some of you listening at least can relate to. Maybe if it's not cars, maybe it's something else in your life that you can relate to this situation. Now I have this extra car. To bring us up to speed on the cars I currently own, again, just for my new listeners at the 9 a.m. slot, I have a 1983 DeLorean, which I don't even consider like a daily use car. I certainly don't daily it. I used to daily drive it. I was the only kid in high school daily driving a DeLorean. I got the DeLorean back in the year 2000 for less than a used Honda Civic. This was before high speed, you know, internet is, this is before internet was what it is today, and hardly anybody knew anything about the DeLorean other than it was the car from Back to the Future and something about cocaine. So I got it for super cheap. I did well. That was a good investment, but I don't view the DeLorean as this thing that I take out every day. I drive it maybe a couple times a month right now. But it's way more of an investment. It's way more of a nest egg thing. It's way more of a historical artifact to me. It's a museum piece, kind of more in my mind. I mean, I've had it for 20 years. I've had it for over 20 years. It's been over 20 years. July 2020 was exactly 20 years of me owning the DeLorean. I've owned it most of my life. It is almost, it is as much of a family member to me as a hunk of metal, rubber, and plastic, and fiberglass, and gasoline, and oil can be. Which I know a lot of you car guys and gals listening, you know that an inanimate object such as a car can become very important to you. And that is as important as it's become to me. That said, if my son needed some sort of treatment, if I needed to sell the DeLorean, I would in a heartbeat. I wouldn't even think about it. It's not for sale. I have every year I get several offers for it, and they were really good offers, but it's just not for sale. You would have to bring me a suitcase full of, you know, FU money for me to sell Lauren the DeLorean. It's just, it's not for sale. So I've got the DeLorean. Now I have the Chevy Bolt, but I have this third car, that 2010 Audi S5. Is anyone else in the situation, or have you ever been in the situation where you have this thing that you don't need but is worth something, and now you're kind of wondering, or you wondered, what am I going to do with this? Am I going to sell it and put the money in the bank? Am I going to sell it, or maybe use it as a means to get into another car? What are you going to do with it? So I'll just tell you where I'm at right now. I'm looking at Rowdy, and at one point in my dream, and I'm still wrestling with this, is my dream to keep it? Is my dream to keep this small block V8, six-speed manual transmission, you know, last of a dying breed, I call it a hot rod, keep it forever? Is this going to be my V8? You know, a lot of people have Mustangs, or they have old Camaros and Chevelles and all sorts of things, and that's like kind of, that was their prize, and that's what they wanted to hold on to forever. Is this 2010 Audi my old Mustang? Is it my old V8 manual transmission vehicle that I'd like to keep around? So I'm wrestling with that. But that also has me going on to classic Auto Trader and onto Craigslist and different classic car websites and looking at like 1945 Fords, 1955 Chevys. Just thinking what I could realistically get for Rowdy, and then applying that kind of maximum price into the parameters of the classic car search and seeing what could I get, conservatively speaking, what could I get for $9,000? Let's say I sold Rowdy very conservatively. I just bit the bullet and sold it for $9,000. What could I get for $9,000? And again, I'm looking at old, you know, 50s Chevys. It's not every classic car, because anybody who knows, classic cars have skyrocketed in value. So classic cars that you can get for under $10,000, it's a very interesting pool. For instance, I have had two old Volkswagen Beetles. My very first car was a 1974 Volkswagen Beetle, and then later on in life, I had a 1969 Volkswagen Beetle. And there's something about Volkswagen Beetles, old Volkswagens, is I kind of joke when I say this, once you pop, you can't stop. So I got to say, the biggest contender in my mind right now when I look at Rowdy is if I decide that I'm not going to keep it as my kind of lifelong hot rod thing, that if I convert this into a classic car, I feel like mentally I'm an inch away from pulling the trigger on another Beetle. Now, Beetles have gone up in value. Never in my wildest dreams would I have thought I had ever seen a Volkswagen Beetle go for more than like $5,000. Like back in the day, back when my first car, like in 1997, was a 1974 Beetle, if you would have told me that one day this thing would be worth over $5,000, like, you are out of your friggin' mind. There's no way an old Volkswagen Beetle is going to be worth, even with inflation, more than $1,500. These things are like potato chips. They're just everywhere. There's no way they're going to be worth money. But they are. They're not extravagant. It's not crazy amount of money, but they've risen. I'm going to continue this conversation. I'm coming up here on the break. I hope you're enjoying the conversation. Let me know what classic cars you're into. GeekTherapyRadio.com. Don't go anywhere. More Geek Therapy Radio coming up. We're going to continue this classic car kind of conversation in a minute. Don't go anywhere.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Geek Therapy Radio. You've got your mental curator, Johnny Hamburger here. Go to geektherapyradio.com for more information and to let me know what your geek thing is, because we're all geeks about something. Also, open up your favorite podcast app and search for Geek Therapy Radio Podcast. Just look for the red, white, and black color scheme and you are good to go. That's me. So we were talking about classic cars, and maybe you have this second or third car that you don't really know what to do with, a daily driver. Let's say you have like a 2012 Chevy Malibu. I don't know what it is. Maybe there's still a little bit of meat on the bones as far as its value. Although I don't know, a 2012 Malibu, there's probably not a lot of meat on those bones, but you get what I'm saying. Let's say you have a car sitting around that's probably worth in between, you know, $8,000 to $10,000. And you've begun looking, you've begun fancying the idea. Maybe you go to sleep, your head hits the pillow and you're thinking for the last few minutes before you go to bed. Instead of counting sheep, you're just like, what can I turn that old Audi into? Rather than just boring old money to put in my savings account, like, what if I just like pull the trigger and go for that classic? That car that you really wanted in high school that maybe was kind of an oddball, but you really loved it. For instance, I'll give you, here's a perfect example. Forgive me, I'm easily excitable. In my little search, when I put in the parameters of what I think I can get for my 2010 Audi S5, let's say between, I don't know, $7,000 and $10,000, something like that, conservatively. Honestly, if I really do it right, if I really put the best face forward and I go to the right people and put it on bringatrailer.com or carsandbids.com, I think 12 grand is reasonable, but again, that's wishful thinking. More conservative is around 9 or 10. So I plugged in the parameter, $9,000 to $10,000 maximum price into a classic car websites. You know, a car I came across, a quirky car that maybe a lot of people didn't love back in the day. And maybe this was your car, depending on how old you are. This was a car in high school that, you know, people kind of ragged on it, but you kind of loved it. I came across, I think it was a 1967 Chevrolet Corvair. The car that Ralph Nader hated. The rear engine sedan. I've got a thing. Obviously, since my first car was a 1974 Beetle and I currently own a 1983 DeLorean. I've owned a 1983 DeLorean for 20 years. I have this soft spot in my heart for rear and mid-engine cars. The DeLorean's rear engine, the Volkswagen Beetle's rear engine. I had an MR2 Spider, which is technically mid-engine. I had the MR2 for a while. I still kick myself for selling that. But I have this thing for like non-traditional cars. And you don't get much more quirky, other than the DeLorean, you don't get much more quirky than a freaking Corvair. Youngins who don't know anything that I'm talking about regarding the Corvair, Google search the Corvair. It has a sordid and bloody history. It's the car, the Corvair is the car that virtually triggered this governmental stepping in and getting involved with the safety and manufacturing of vehicles from then on forward, as far as seat belts and crash tests and airbags and all that. You can thank the Corvair for almost single-handedly triggering all of that. The Econobox and the fuel efficiency and everything, it basically spurred the government to say, all right, seriously, we need to get involved. You can't make more cars like the Corvair. The Corvair, I think Ralph Nader's book, was it called like Deadly at Any Speed? Basically, the dynamics and the handling dynamics of the Corvair, with the engine hanging way out back over the rear wheels, essentially, or just where was it? Over the rear wheels. Was it just over the rear wheels or just beyond the rear wheels? Either way, the center of gravity for the Corvair was very, very rear by. Oh, the book Ralph Nader wrote was called Unsafe at Any Speed. And basically, the book came out in 1965, and Ralph Nader said the Corvair was, quote, the one car accident, that a design flaw in the rear suspension made the car even more likely to roll over and avoidance maneuvers. So the Corvair basically had this gigantic pendulum behind it. So the another famous rear engine car, the Porsche 911, had the same kind of rear engine design, except the rear suspension was way better and could keep that rearward weight bias under control. The DeLorean, the same. If you look at these old cars with rear engines, you'll notice that they have what's called staggered wheels, meaning the front wheels.
Oh, sorry.
The front wheels are smaller and usually more narrow than the back wheels, which are usually larger and wider. That's definitely what's going on with the DeLorean. The front wheels in the DeLorean are 14 inches. Oh, what's the tire tread size? 14. They're skinny. And then the back wheels are 15-inch rims, but they are very wide truck tires. And that is to compensate for the engine being over that rear axle. Yeah, the Corvair didn't really... It was inadequate to compensate. At least by 1965, it was inadequate to compensate for that rear engine and the rear weight bias. So it was called the one-car accident, meaning the drivers were getting to accidents all by themselves, flipping and rolling the car over. The Corvair didn't have the best reputation. And yet, I go off on that whole diatribe about the Corvair because in my searching, when I put the parameters, you know, $10,000 maximum for classic car, I've come across a Corvair in San Antonio, a 1967 Corvair, and I'm looking at this. It's, to me, it's gorgeous. Like, it's a beautiful, old car. Like it's the last of that kind of... One of the last of that kind of styling, that vintage 50s, 60s, very flamboyant automotive design, where the design of the car is all that mattered. Safety and everything else and how it operates is completely secondary to how it's designed. So this 67 Corvair looks beautiful. I mean, it's classy. It's got lots of chrome. The interior, the dashboard is all that all the classy dials and everything is analog, and it's an automatic, which I don't care. A 60s, you know, cruising sedan, I don't care. Automatic's fine. I'd prefer a manual transmission, but in an old 60s sedan like a Corvair, just to cruise it every, you know, once in a while on the weekends, on a Sunday, just kind of roll the windows down and cruise. I may have gotten bit by a bug that isn't a bug, that isn't a Volkswagen bug. For some reason, I saw that Corvair as I was scrolling through the tablet last night after feeding my son at, when was it, 2 a.m, something like that. He woke up for a feeding, and I'm just kind of winding my way, you know, winding my mind back down to go to bed, and I'm just cruising these sites, and I see this Corvair, and I keep coming back to it, and I can't shake it out of my mind. And I know my wife listens to most, if not all, of my podcasts. Honey, I'm not saying that I'm going to go out tomorrow and get a freaking Corvair. That you wouldn't be involved in the discussion, at least. I'm just saying, listeners, for some reason, I've got the Corvair on my mind, and I never would have imagined that could happen. I scroll through a bunch of old Fords from the 40s, you know, the gangster looking kind of cars, even though the gangster era was kind of more 30s, but you know what I'm saying. The 40s era Fords, 40s era Chevys. Edsels. What was that, an Edsel? What was the other one I was looking at? Oh gosh, Oldsmobiles, Buicks, all these kind of cars from the 40s. But then I came across this 1967 swanky looking Corvair. That's the perfect descriptor of it. Swanky. And I'm just kind of thinking of my driveway. So I've got the DeLorean in the garage, and then right behind that would be the Corvair under a car cover, but just, you know, picture it without the cover, obviously. I don't even know why I mentioned the cover. So picture the DeLorean, and then the Chevy Corvair, and then a Chevy Bolt right behind it, the EV, and then my wife's Jetta. That's four cars. But again, I seriously don't think of the DeLorean as a car. I think it's way more of just an investment. Why can't I shake this Corvair? Does anybody else relate to that? And it, again, we'll change modes here, not just with cars. Something that I often talk about on Geek Therapy Radio is my love of vintage and analog audio recording. I went to audio engineering school. I am an audio engineer. I'm certified in. I work with audio all the time. I do the podcast, do the radio show. I mix albums. I produce albums. I master albums. I have a very soft spot in my heart for vintage recording equipment and formats of years gone by. My favorite format of years gone by are audio cassettes. I have a several cassette recording machines. So I have a Tascam 644, which is the ultimate kind of four-track cassette recorder. Then I have a Tascam 688, which crams 8 individual audio tracks for mixing onto a single cassette tape, runs at a very high tape speed. If my house is on fire, and my wife and my son and the cats are outside safe, and I had time, the only thing I would grab out of the house, material possession, would be that Tascam 688 cassette, 8-track cassette recorder. So, you know, we're going to finish this thought in the final segment, but is there something else? You know, we've been talking about cars, but is there something else that you've kind of like, you cruised around eBay and you saw this and you're like, oh yeah, I remember that. Then you can't shake it out of your head. It's like, should I get that? Should I actually get that thing? What about money? What about stuff? Let's continue that conversation coming up. More Geek Therapy Radio. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Geek Therapy Radio. You've got your mental curator, Johnny Hemberger. Go to geektherapyradio.com to contact me. I read every single email and I respond. I think I've responded at this point to every single email, unless it's an obvious bot or a fish or a troll or whatever. Geektherapyradio.com is the best way to get in contact with me. The first thing you see when you go to geektherapyradio.com is that contact form where you can let me know what you're a geek about or let me know any questions or comments. But that's how you get in touch with me, geektherapyradio.com, and there's much more. The YouTube channel, I just went over 4,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel, so thank you very much for that. I know 4,000 subscribers in the grand scheme of things, when we subscribe to channels of over a million subscribers, I remember when my channel was zero, and I remember the road, how long it took to get to 4,000, so I just ticked over 4,000. Thank you so much. There's a lot of I put a lot of fun stuff on the Geek Therapy Radio YouTube channel because there's so many things I can tell you about on the radio or tell you about in a podcast. The YouTube channel is where I can really show you these things, where I can really show you those four-track tape recorders I was talking about, show you my unboxing of an old Atari ST, 520 ST-FM from 1985, show you me unboxing and setting up my old Compact Desk Pro 286E. And I have a 386S, or it's the other way around, 286S and 386E, whatever. A 286 computer and a 386 computer from our own homegrown Compaq computer. Was it Compaq Computer Corporation? Compaq Computer? Whatever it was. Compaq here in Houston. I have two of their examples of desk pros from the late 1980s. The 286 is one of my favorite things, material possessions that I own outside of that 8-track Tascam 688 cassette recorder. It's called the MIDI Studio. It's something that home recordists, you know, singer-songwriters and bands in the early 90s would use 4-track cassette recorders to record demos and record their albums and record songs. Who was it? Was it Bruce Springsteen, I think, used a 4-track? What album was it? Was it Bruce? A very prolific singer-songwriter released an entire album that he recorded and mixed entirely on a 4-track cassette recorder. These things were just how it was done back in the day. So in the previous segment, we were talking about cars and some Apple that gets your eye and you can't stop thinking about it. Maybe you've thought about some old other kind of technology or some other thing. And for me, to kind of relate this to people, I am very much into cassette decks. And I through this radio show and through this podcast, I have, for better or worse, I mean, I think it's better because it is kind of the goal that I set out to achieve is maybe you'll listen to this show and you'll find something that really sparks. Oh, that sounds interesting. And then maybe you get into it. I've had a few listeners get bit by the cassette bug and go out and buy and restore a decent cassette deck. And just the biggest kind of note that I get, you know, people getting back into cassettes when they get into a decent deck and have a decent tape and whatnot is, holy crap, this sounds way better than I remember cassette sounding. It's kind of like vinyl. People think of vinyl records as these old scratchy things that your grandma listened to coming out of the little horn. No, modern vinyl sounds incredible. And you got to remember, vinyl, something like 150 years of R&D, why wouldn't it sound great in 2020? So cassettes are kind of the same way. We remember making mixtapes. If you grew up in the 70s, 80s, 90s, making mixtapes by recording, listening to 94.5 The Buzz or The Arrow or whatever other classic rock station was around Houston at the time, Rock 101 and all that, Outlaw Dave. Oh my gosh, I freaking love Outlaw Dave. I don't want to get too sidetracked with that, but we make mixtapes. You would hear the Stone Temple Pilots come on, and then Nirvana come on, and then Duran, and then Michael Jackson, and then Edwin McCain singing I'll Be, and then Foo Fighter songs, whatever, and you would make these mixtapes. But what most of us had, at least back in the day, which I think was a Wednesday, but back in the day, we would just have these, you know, cheap boom boxes we got for Christmas, our parents or somebody, aunt and uncle got from Walmart, just this cheap boombox. And that's how we would make mixtapes. And the mixtapes we would make were type one, you know, normal bias cassette tapes on a crappy tape recording mechanism. And that's kind of what we remember. Hissy, scratchy tapes that we record broadcasts off of radio to make mixtapes on. When you get back into cassettes now, if you were so inclined after you listen to this and you, wow, I haven't thought about cassettes in a while. And then you went to eBay and we'll talk about that in a minute. And you got a cassette deck and now you're setting it up and you got a new kind of found love of it. You'll be making these recordings on good decks like a Nakamichi or a high-end Sony or Iowa, whatever. Like, wow, I do not remember tapes sounding this good. So if you have this kind of inkling in your mind, if you get bit by this bug, you can't stop thinking about cassette tapes for some reason. You're sitting around there and the pandemic's got to you and politics has got to you and your brain is frazzled and fried. But for some reason, there's this little kind of seed growing in the back of your mind. Why am I thinking about cassette tapes? Why am I thinking about vinyl records? Why am I thinking about RC cars and quadcopters? And why is this old art easel that I had in college coming to mind? Or maybe you know, that's a good example. Maybe during the pandemic, you've started to clean out your attic, you clean out your garage, depending on where you're listening to this. If you're listening to the podcast somewhere up north and you've cleaned out your basement, whatever, and you found this old thing. For some reason, what's coming to my mind is like an old Schwinn bicycle that you pick up and you haven't seen this thing or touched this thing in possibly half of a century, a third, a quarter, a half of a century. And you pick up this old bicycle, for example, it could be any old thing. And you think nothing made today is as substantial as this. Look at all the detail. It's the reason why a lot of us love classic cars. It's not because the visceral experience. They smell like oil and gasoline and leather. I mean, that's part of it. But that it comes from an era, just like this old figurative bicycle I'm talking about, comes from an era where people built things with their hands and took care and pride in the art of it. You look at old cars like a 1967 Corvair, and there's art there in the way it was designed. Not with computers, with hands and blood and emotion. And carved out of clay to make the mock-ups instead of rendered in 3D on a computer. And nothing against 3D rendering. I mean, that's all great. The march of technology is great. But there's a certain, I'm going to sound pedantic and whatever here, je ne sais quoi about something old that was built with love and designed with passion. That kind of the function of it was second to how it looked and how it made you feel just by looking at it. So old cars is that maybe you've been cleaning out and you found this old bicycle and like this bike, it's not carbon fiber. It's not composites, anything. It's just Detroit steel. And somebody bent these tubes with muscles, with some machinery, but with muscles and sweat. And they formed it into this beautiful crafted thing. And the part of the beauty of the craftsmanship are those little imperfections that make it beautiful. There's such thing as, you know, I hate to equate this to people, but when people are like too polished, perfect. Here's a perfect example. When I see people whose teeth are too white, it kind of puts me off. Like that's too perfect. And when it's too perfect, it's in a way ugly. Does that make sense? That must make sense. I know if somebody's listening right now totally agrees with it. Is when something looks too perfect, it's almost unappealing. So the way modern cars and everything are made, they're almost too perfect. They all look the same. It's unappealing. And then when you look at old cars and you can see kind of pits in the weld, you can see where a human being welded this thing by hand and that it's not perfect, that you could take 10 of these Corvairs, for example, and put them, line them up, and each one, once you get close, looks a little bit different because of the slight imperfections, those imperfections that make it beautiful. So maybe you're thinking about an old thing in your mind that you haven't thought about in a while. Maybe your art, the imperfections in your art that you used to make in college, but then life and kids and a job happened. You haven't got back into your art, but you found your old easel. Get back into it. Maybe do pull the trigger or look further into getting that old classic car that you've had your eye on for the past few weeks you can't stop thinking about. Maybe old cassette deck that you haven't thought about in years. Maybe get back into cassettes. Something where there is beautiful imperfection. That's a good way to sum it up. Beautiful imperfection. That's something that I think we've lost in modern times. Thank you for listening to Geek Therapy Radio. You are worthy of love. You are worthy of giving love, receiving love, and you're worthy of your own self-respect. Take care. GeekTherapyRadio.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.